Dr. Axel Goller joins me this week to discuss barley, malting, and German brewing. This is Beersmith Podcast number 295.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 295, and it's late December 2023. Dr. Axel Goller joins me this week to discuss barley, malting, and German brewing. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They invite you to join their upcoming brewery workshop, March 24th to 27th, in Austin, Texas. This one-of-a-kind event brings together professional brewers to help you start or grow your own craft brewery. To learn more, please visit breweryworkshop.com. Again, that's breweryworkshop.com. And Beersmith Web, the online version of Beersmith Brewing Software. Beersmith for the Web lets you design great beer recipes from any browser, including your tablet or phone. Edit recipes on the go and access them the same full suite of recipe building tools as our desktop version. Try Beersmith Web today by creating a free account at beersmithrecipes.com. And finally, a reminder to click that like and subscribe button on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, or whatever platform you're on. Clicking those buttons is a great way to support the show. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Dr. Axel Goller, CEO of Bestmalz. Dr. Goller did his PhD in Switzerland on German family breweries, and he worked at Boston Consulting Group for 10 years. He's the grandson of the founder of Bestmalz, Max Goller, and has spearheaded the company's international expansion since 2014 to over 85 countries. Axel, it's great to have you back on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm very fine, thank you. Getting ready for Christmas.
Awesome. Yeah, we just had our first snow here today, actually, in Virginia, so.
Yeah, but we had lots of snow in Munich last week. That was a disaster.
But, I heard they shut down the train station, which is pretty unusual.
Everything was shut down, so yeah. It was complete shutdown. I think it was the most, we had the most snow in Munich since 1930 or something.
Amazing.
So quite some time back.
Wow. Well, I thought I might start by asking you what's been happening at Bestmalz. When we last talked, you were facing quite a few challenges, including rising energy prices, international competition, rising shipping, all kinds of things.
Yeah. As you may know, the political situation in Germany has not improved. So unfortunately, we still have a very insecure situation at the moment. So the German government, similar to what happened in the US, has not passed the budget for 2024 yet, because of some legal issues that they had in the budget. And so many of the funds that they wanted to invest in order to support industry to cope with the change from fossil to fossil-free energy are now very insecure because there's no funding. So that continues to be a real concern because, as many other industries, we don't know how this can ever be financed when the government asks us to be fossil-free within a very short amount of years. So wow. That is still at the moment. We're having a real crisis in the government, and because no one is investing in times where there's a lot of insecurity, so definitely not a good time.
And you're in a malting. We should probably say that malting is a very energy intensive business, right?
Oh yeah, very much. So we are among the 2,000 most energy intensive companies in Germany. So. And that goes for the rest of the malting industry too. So that said, that continues to be a real issue of concern, especially when we're talking about the 4 to 6 time span. Yeah. Exports has been a disaster in 2023. because of the recession, global recession in more or less all our export markets, including the U.S. and Asia.
Yeah, and, I know. People I've talked to in the brewing industry say it's just very, very expensive to import malts from overseas now.
Yeah, the freight rates have come down. So on the North American freight relations, we are seeing much, much lower terms. So that is good. The exchange rate is also helping at the moment when you export or when the U.S. imports from Germany. But the grain prices are very high still because the farmers in Germany have to pay the higher, obviously the higher gas or diesel prices.
Well, fertilizer, I think, has doubled, at least here. Yeah. I don't know if that's the case over there.
Yeah, very much. So that still is a concern. And so we don't expect that the grain prices in Germany are coming down where they have been in 2020, for instance, before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And in Europe, the situation is quite different. So France has just announced that they're going to freeze the nuclear energy prices for at a certain level, which is very, very competitive or even much, much better than our German prices. So in Europe, there's a lot of competition at the moment, which is one of the reasons why the malts from the Netherlands, France, or Belgium are considerably cheaper than what we can do in Germany right now. So that's an issue. Our business in Germany, Switzerland has been very, very good in 2023. So overall, we're quite happy.
Yeah, it's tough though. I mean, you're a very competitive environment right now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we talked a little bit about this, but you know, one of the biggest problems you faced was rising energy prices, particularly natural gas. Has the natural gas market eased up at all in the last year? Obviously, we had the war in Ukraine creating significant problems with the supply from Russia. Has natural gas gotten any better?
Yes. If you look at the spot rates for gas, they are fairly low. So they are even near, depending on what time you're looking at, but the prices are even near to what they have been before the Ukraine invasion. But what most people, especially most customers, don't see is that the contracts from all the energy suppliers have been adapted. So they have shifted a lot of risk from their field into the field of the customer. So there can be very much adverse effects on your own energy bill. For instance, if you book energy capacity, if you buy future contracts, and for whatever reason you cannot fulfill these contracts, then these contracts are compensated or sold the amounts that you cannot take up due to your agreement. They are sold on the spot market. So if the spot market is very low and you booked, let's say, 80% of your annual demand through a future contract, then you become liable to the energy company. So then a low gas price is working to your disadvantage.
That's amazing to me. So if you pick a spot price in the future and you book it and you actually buy that future contract, they're not necessarily binding, I guess?
No, they are binding. Okay. But we are obliged to take exactly that amount and not on an annual basis. So if we book, let's say we booked 80% of our demand for the next year, 2024, then the energy suppliers say, okay, you have a curve of your average demand in the next year. This is so much in January, February, March, and so on.
Yeah.
And then they break it down to a daily amount that you have to take up.
Wow.
And if you don't take this daily amount,
you still,
for instance,
pay.
Because customers, you know, it rains, customers, the breweries don't need as much malt, so your production is slowed down, so you need less than the amount that was planned for March, let's say, then they take the difference that you didn't take up and they sell it on the spot market. So you have a fixed rate,
but
if you book a fixed rate, which is now 100 and spot rate is 40, difference is going to be sold in the market.
So you take
and that
a big
can
loss.
Work to your disadvantage. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
So,
Well, let's also talk about one of the other topics you wanted to cover. You sent me a couple of topics you wanted to cover. One of them was the challenges with the 2023 barley crop in Germany and France. And so let's talk about what the farmers have been doing and some of the challenges they faced this last year.
Yes. We had our trade show, the biggest, I think it's the biggest beer trade show in the world. It was last week, just very recently. And the biggest concern of all our German breweries is the new crop, because in the new crop, which is crop 2023, of course, everything went wrong. So you had rain in the wrong periods. You had dry periods when you didn't want, when you needed more rain, it was too dry. It was rainy during harvest, which is not very good, because the grain is brought in humid. Typically in Germany, as opposed to the UK, for instance, we don't have any infrastructures to dry the grain when it comes from the field. So that's to our disadvantage. And so everything went pretty much wrong, unfortunately. So the concern is with crop. So I had people from the industry, which have been around for 30, 40 years, and they said this is the worst crop that they have ever seen.
Oh, my goodness.
And it depends on the region a lot. So we are fortunate in the southwest of Germany. We are still pretty fortunate because, in our region, especially during harvest, it was dry.
Well, that's
a big advantage. But in other regions, like in Bavaria, or it really goes by 100 kilometers south or north, it can make a huge difference.
Yeah.
So if you look at the grain this year, the brewing barley, the protein values, on average, they look fine. They're around 10.5 on average, but that doesn't mean anything because it may be way too high in some regions and way too low in other regions. So very, very challenging. And of course, we have contracts with our customers, so they expect us to deliver good barley, which is in line with their specifications. And we just have to try to do the best, but we have to be very, very careful that we don't take in any grains which we can't work with. At the same time, if you are, do not accept deliveries too often, if you reject trucks when they come to your premises, you reject them on the basis of protein, on grading, or anything else, you may end up not having enough, even though you have contracts. But if these contracts cannot be fulfilled, that's unfortunate, because if there's no brewing barley, and the number that was given by the German Brewing Barley Association was 50%, so that only 50% of all the harvested grain can be used for brewing.
Wow.
Which is dramatic. So that would be so.
That's a 50% shock on the market, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, and that's why the prices, of course, are still very high. They have come down a little bit, but the grain prices are still very high, and they are still too high when we look at the very price-sensitive customers globally, because, they're all facing their challenges in their markets, so they are still price-sensitive when it comes to, of course, their raw materials. It's going to be a challenge.
Now, if I understand the German brewing market, a lot of it really is brew local. I mean, a lot of the German beer is produced by, from German hops and German barley. What does a 50% shock mean to a market like that?
It means undersupply. So the contracts that malt companies have with their breweries, they may not be fulfilled. So simply the breweries will possibly end up not having enough malt, which means they can't brew.
Which is
dramatic, but there's nothing that you can do. And most of the contracts are made under the condition that there is enough brewing barley available in the market. Because if it's not, there's very little what you can do. Secondly, it means the prices will continue to be high. Third, I think people will be very sensitive about quality, so that there can be some compromises, but only to a certain degree, to a certain level. And so I think a top rated malt will be in high demand for the next year.
Wow.
We have been fortunate that our quality has been really good in 2023 throughout the year. And also, I think our team has an experience of 15 to 20 years for our most experienced people in our production. And that is really important, because you really have to look at the crop. You have to see whether you need to produce it right away or you put it in your silos. It requires it's a challenge. So it requires a lot of experience, and that is needed. And I think here we're doing quite well in our company.
Yeah, I know moisture is really, really important, especially for the barley coming in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important in two ways. If it's during harvest, when there's too much moisture, and also a certain, which typically is during harvest, it's warm, then it can happen that you have germination already in the field. And mm-hmm. that is really critical, because, if the kernels start to germinate while they are still not harvested.
Yeah, it's a real problem.
They may lose their germination power. They may lose their germination power. Sorry, I just have to.
No, it's good.
I just have to stop this. They may lose their germination power during the later malting process, and that is really critical, because then you can literally throw it away.
Yeah.
So you need to be very careful with your material that you took in.
Which is probably why you lost something like half the crop this year, right? At least from a brewing perspective. Interesting.
Yes. And also, the kernels don't have the size, so the grading is not very satisfying.
Yeah.
And then if the kernels don't have a certain diameter, we typically say kernels below 2.5 millimeters in size,
mm-hmm.
They don't have the... They don't bring you the capabilities that the brewers really want. And so, and we call that the grading.
Mm-hmm.
And if grading is insufficient, then also the yield for the brewing process in the later brewing process is insufficient. And that, of course, costs extra to the brewer, which sure. they don't like.
Sure. You also sent me a note that the German brewing industry has faced some serious challenges in 2023. So obviously the 2023 barley crop is going to affect 2024 big time. But you said there's been some real challenges this year in brewing.
In Germany, the demand was not exciting. I mean, the demand relative to the days before the pandemic, the demand of the consumption of beer in Germany was not what it should be.
Interesting. Is there a substitution going on? Are people drinking something else, or are they just drinking less in general?
There is a substitution to alcohol-free products.
Interesting.
So this is number one. Then you have, of course, in the U.S., you see the ciders coming up a lot.
Yeah.
You see other drinks that are becoming, with the young generation, they're becoming more fancy, but also in Germany, which is a very traditional beer country, you see that customers are switching to other products. At the Oktoberfest, which was this year, it was 2 days longer than before.
Sure.
So the extension of 2 days brought a record participation, but in terms of beer consumption, the beer consumption went down despite
wow.
record participation. So people, even at the Oktoberfest, people drink less. And then there's one problem in our country, that the distribution, the retailing sector is extremely strong, very strong, very concentrated, very strong, which has a negative impact on the power, the capability, the negotiation power of breweries. So each brewery, even our biggest breweries, are fairly weak when it comes to these huge retailing conglomerates, and so they have a very hard time to push through their price increases, and in a market where everything is increasing in terms of costs, of course they would like to, you know, pass this on to the customers. But this is very hard because the retail sector says, no, we don't accept any increases. Beer must be cheap. And that's another challenge because they are squeezed from both angles. You know, they're squeezed from the suppliers because we need more. We have higher costs, so we need to charge them more. And at the same time, the retail sector says, no, we don't accept any higher prices. So
well, that's one of the things I was wondering, was a higher price actually driving lower consumption. But you're saying they haven't been able to pass along a lot of the price increases, huh?
No, that's very, very difficult with our retailers.
We actually saw some of that here right after the pandemic. The prices didn't rise for quite a while. If you go to the grocery store or whatever, the price on a six pack was very static for a while. But I've noticed in the last year or two, it started to go up finally, at least here.
Yeah, and the willingness of the consumers or the ability of the consumers to pay, the craft beer prices that you see both in the U.S. and in Germany, and in other markets for that matter, the capability of them to pay these prices or the willingness is much less. So they return to the beer, which, the industry beer, which they may not like as much, but if you can't afford it, you can't afford it.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see some of that here in the U.S. as well. We've hit about 9,400, 9,500 breweries or something like that, but that number is starting to really slow down. And I think last year we had almost as many breweries closing as opening. So, even though that market has been growing so rapidly for so many years, I think we're finally reaching a point of some saturation, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. And this same happens, unfortunately, in other markets, like in Brazil. There was a huge craft beer excitement before the pandemic.
Yeah,
during the pandemic, everything was kind of freezed. But now, due to the fairly high prices, consumers are not willing to or not capable of paying what a craft brewer needs in order to have good supplies, nice restaurants, nice bars, and all this.
Yeah. It's a challenge. I think the overall market, everybody's being pressed by inflation, certainly.
That's
a global phenomenon too, really.
Yeah. And to make things worse, even the hop harvest was not very good at all. Also, the hop market is not very good. So
I assume that's probably facing the same challenges the barley growers faced, right? Too much water, too little water.
Yes. And also the consumption, the consumers, the triple IPAs are not anymore in the fashion. And so it seems like even there, customers are returning to more traditional, a little bit more traditional beers. And the crazy, very high hop beers are becoming less and less.
Well, that's an interesting question. I was told, at least by other people in Germany, that the craft beer, a lot of the craft beer we drink here, a lot of the, like you said, crazy IPAs and so on, never really caught on that much in the German market. But that's true. I was told that, the vast majority of the consumption there is still traditional German beers, right?
That's absolutely true. And also, the American hops is not used as much, which is typically, the strong flavors of the typical
the Pacific Northwest hops, and of course New Zealand and Australia, which grow hops derived from the Pacific Northwest.
So most of our breweries in Germany, I think they still work with the more traditional hops from Hallertau, which is in South Germany. So that is a little bit of a difference. But for instance, I'm coming back from Switzerland. I was in Switzerland yesterday and the end of last week. I met with some breweries, and they also say that the days of extremely hoppy beers are gone, at least at the moment.
Well, that's certainly not true here. There's still, I think, still more than half the craft beer sold is still IPAs. But it is interesting, and we're all wondering what's going to come next or what's the next great beer going to be. I don't really know, but it sounds like in Germany they're turning back to traditional styles, right?
Yeah, I mean, we have always more traditional, and you know, we have around 1,200 breweries in Germany. They have been around forever. Mostly they are very much in the tradition of their city, or most of your listeners will know Cologne, having a very old tradition of beer, Düsseldorf, Bavaria, Munich, of course. And you know, these customers, consumers, they don't switch easily. So that's why we are much more traditional in many ways.
Well, that can certainly work to your favor. Another note you sent me was on you're facing certain challenges now with certain weed killers, I guess. I can't pronounce it. I guess it's glyphosate. Being banned by the EU, right?
Exactly. I mean, in the US, there have been quite a few trials from consumers or farmers even, or even private, you know, residential people who are working in their garden with Roundup. Roundup is one of the...
There's a number of famous class action cases going on here and over Roundup, apparently. But
exactly. And people claim crazy damages because of cancer or other diseases that they bring in connection with their use of Roundup. And so glyphosate, in some of our export markets, there's zero tolerance for glyphosate. Mm-hmm. And in other markets, it's still widely accepted. In Germany, the government has decided that they want to ban glyphosate from January 2024 completely.
Which is really soon.
It's very soon. So that the use of glyphosate will be forbidden by Germany. Now, the EU very recently ruled that this is not the case. So the EU decided that the glyphosate license has been prolonged. So that means, in effect, that any farmer in the EU can continue to use glyphosate. So now there is a contradiction between German legislation and EU legislation, which must not be. According to the EU legislation, you cannot do that. So the German government, again, has to revisit their decision, and they have to see what they're going to do, because they can restrict the use of glyphosate or the application of glyphosate, but they cannot forbid it. They cannot ban it, because then they are in contradiction with EU law, which is not permitted.
Yeah.
So for us, you know, for us as, or any farmer for that matter, or any agricultural player, this creates a lot of confusion, because obviously you cannot switch all your analytical program from one day to the other. I mean, these are complex analytical routines that we have established with external institutions, our internal routines, testing routines for the barley that we take in. So if there is now a change that we were expecting, but it's not going to happen, this creates a lot of conflict in our own processes.
Yeah, I mean, how do you handle that from a maltster's perspective? Are you actually tracking barley that has glyphosate and doesn't,
guess,
to support your various customers?
Yes. Yeah. And there's other chemicals that are forbidden in Germany or very strongly restricted in Germany, mm-hmm. but they are permitted, for instance, in France. So I won't bother you with the names, but anyone who's interested, I can give some examples, because they are even more complex than glyphosate. One of them is pyrimiphos methyl. I don't expect you to repeat this name, but this is one of the chemicals which is permitted in France, widely used in France, but strictly forbidden in Germany. And the U.S. FDA has a zero tolerance for pyrimiphos methyl. So,
oh wow.
And that means, in effect, if you are using French barley, you got to be extremely careful that none of this barley is getting into the U.S. market. Because if they catch you, the FDA catches you with any trace of pyrimiphos methyl, they will take your products off the market.
Right. That makes sense.
So and the same is for Taiwan, for instance, markets where you not necessarily would expect it. People also, I think, our regulators, they tend to forget what implications their political decisions have. And so, of course, I mean, the government has good reasons why they want certain chemicals to be applied and others not. But there always needs to be a lead time to allow the industry to adjust.
I mean, it must be creating a nightmare for farmers, too, trying to decide what they're going to use next year. And of course, it drives costs. And as you point out, a lot of them have long-term contracts. It must be a nightmare.
Sure. And of course, and then there's a, you know, a tendency, I mean, agricultural companies are often family businesses. And so if something was permitted today and it's not permitted tomorrow, you got to be very careful not someone in the family says, okay, we always use this, just put it on the just put it on the barley, because then you're really getting in trouble. So we, as a industrial malt company, we just have to expect that even when it's permitted, it's not going to happen from one day to the next, even if there is a very strict line that the government prescribes, but it's not going to happen from one day to the next. So interesting, very, very interesting. And, you know, people tend to forget sometimes when they drink a beer how complex this process is, how much regulation there is, because of course it's a food item, and you need to be extremely careful that it's good for the consumer and that there's no harm other than the harm that he may get from drinking too much, but certainly not cancer, certainly not other diseases that you get from any chemicals that are in your product, especially in Germany, because of our Reinheitsgebot.
Yeah.
We are proud and also extremely strict that nothing gets into the malt and the beer, which is not good for the consumers.
Yeah, that makes sense. Interesting. You were talking for just a minute ago, and we talked a little bit about this last time, that a lot of the businesses in Germany are family owned. And I think some of that's partially a product of tax law, but also a tradition. Do you want to talk a little about the family-owned tradition, I guess, in for so many businesses in Germany?
It's true. I mean, we have the backbone of our industry is the what we call the middle-sized, small, medium SMUs, small and middle-sized enterprises, SMEs or SMUs, how we call them. And many of them are still family-owned. The implications are quite strong, because family business, they have more of a long-term horizon when they do their decisions. So long-term partnerships,
you're not beholden necessarily to the stockholders who want profit right now, for example.
Exactly. Typically, it's a family. Of course, the family often depends on some return from the business, because your 80-year-old grandmother, she may not have any other income than the funds that she gets from the business. So, especially during the pandemic or other periods of crisis, it was more difficult for family businesses to ensure that their owners get a fair return from their business. Also, in general, the capital. Availability of capital is much more difficult for family businesses. But of course, I personally think it's more fun to work in a family business, because you don't have external shareholders who are only interested in their return. Most of the, certainly all of our family members, they have a tradition of three generations. Next year, we're going to have 125 years of best malts.
That's awesome.
So that's a real long tradition.
And I think your tax law supports it as well, right? There's some advantages if you pass the business on to a family member, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Because inheritance laws are a little bit protective of these family businesses. So you have certain tax shelters if you inherit shares in small and medium-sized enterprises. Yeah,
we have problems like if you own a big farm and you try and pass it on to a family member, it can be a real problem here because you get taxed, obviously. Well, let's switch to a happier topic. What are some of the innovations going on at Best Malts? I know you're not sitting statically watching the world go by here.
No, we had we had some interesting new openings in some of our projects. We were opening a new production, which is a small scale, fully integrated and fully digitized little malting plant that we opened in November.
A highly automated plant then?
Yes, it's 100%. It's very automated, but the real it's a 10 ton, so it's a small small unit. We like to use it for certain niche products that we either don't need or cannot produce in our big industrial facilities.
Sure.
And it's very neat to see what you can do with today's digital support systems. So you can really fine-tune very precisely how long you want to germinate, how much you want to roast, and it all can be done in one single cylinder. In our case, we bought the equipment from Kaspar Schulz, which is one of our very good manufacturers of such little plants. And it allows us to widen our spectrum of our product spectrum into areas that was difficult because of with certain niche products, you simply don't need as much.
You don't need maybe 100 tons or 200 tons of
exactly.
It, right?
Yeah. Exactly. It's maybe 10 tons or even less. And so we have a lot of flexibility in that sector. Also, of course, we have the ongoing repairs. Some are large, some are small. Digitization, we've done a lot, really.
Cool.
Replacing all the old systems. So we become much more fine-tuned in terms of our energy, use of energy, especially in the kiln. Mm-hmm. And you can really save a lot of energy by fine-tuning the time, how long you actually need a certain temperature in the kiln, and also switching it on and off precisely at the moment when you want it.
And obviously that's become very important because I think you mentioned last year that your energy costs at one point were driving almost 80% of the cost of the product, right?
70% of the cost of the product.
Still very high.
It's the barley. No, 70% is the barley.
Oh, okay.
So the raw materials are the most important cost factor. But then, and there you're 100% right, all the rest we have staff costs and we have, of course, the energy costs. So if you take away the raw materials, it's certainly the second biggest cost factor.
Yeah, so very important. That's awesome. Let's see. You had sent me a note too about something about Maris Otter, I guess. Or maybe I thought you thought I'd draw your memory there.
Yeah, I forgot.
That's okay.
This was an interesting innovation, or is an interesting innovation, we were offered by a breeder, a grain breeder, seed developer or grain breeder.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who are actually thinking what grain do we want to develop and what grain do we want to have 5, 6, 10 years from now? And they're putting a lot of research money into this in order to bring a new grain variety on the market.
Sure.
And this company, one of these big companies, came to us and said, listen, we have the opposite. We want to offer you world exclusively, we want to offer you an old grain from the 90s. So from the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's very hard to beat 30 years of grain research. So that's why, you know, a variety that was around 30 years ago in the market typically doesn't have the yield, you know, the resistance to certain
diseases
of the modern grains. So we were a little bit hesitant, but they said, well, look at it. If you like it, you get it world exclusive. So you will be the only ones in the world will have access to this variety. And so we said, okay, interesting offer, but we need to find a real advantage for our customers. And we found two things which we thought are interesting. The first one is foam stability. we could find out that due to certain genetic differences in the corn, mm-hmm. we found that it's superior in terms of foam stability and measurable. So we tested against the modern high yield grain varieties, and we found out that under certain conditions, if the brewer uses it wisely and in a certain way, mm-hmm. he will have 30% more foam.
Wow.
And more foam stability than with a regular grain, which may be of interest to some brewers.
Sure.
Depending on their water, on their equipment, and I mean, every brewer has his issues. And if foam stability is an issue in the beer, this may be a solution. The second thing is that we have requests from Asian customers. We have requests from East European customers for very, very pale malts. So we measure the color of a malt in EBC values. In the US, it's mostly referred to as Lovibond.
Yeah.
And so with this particular grain variety, we can produce extremely pale malts, very, very pale malts, even more so than with the traditional grains.
Yeah.
So that, and that came, and then one of the Chinese customers says, wow, if you get this low in your color, this bright, this pale in your color, then this is a replacement for Maris Otter. And we said, yeah, if you want to see it that way, that's fine. And so that's really exciting. A new product, we call it the Best AXL. A stands for Alexis, which is the name of the old variety. And XL stands for extra large foam. So that is the background for the name. We only have limited capacity. We have a few hundred tons of this only. Because we grow it with our own farmers, it's a 100% restricted closed circle.
Yeah.
So they cannot sell it to anyone else.
Yeah. So it's a private brand or, yeah.
Private brand.
Licensed, I guess, or whatever.
And we see what we can do with it.
I think it's great. You know, one of the trends here you're probably aware of is craft malting has taken off here in the United States to some degree, and. So there's a lot of little malt houses popping up in different areas, and they're also a lot of them are starting to push either the growth of heirloom grains that were grown, you know, barley that was grown a long time ago, or yeah. some of the newer grains that that some of the labs are developing. Because I don't know if it's true in Germany, but here in the United States, there's only a few varieties really that dominate the barley market. And so we're really excited to see some of this innovation with some of the new barleys being grown.
Yeah, it's interesting because of there is now, due to the high cost, there's a real change in the barley varieties that people are placing an emphasis on.
Mm-hmm.
So we are working increasingly with so-called winter barley, which is sowed out earlier.
Right. Yeah, it's set in the fall, I think, right?
November, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also it's harvested earlier so that we get less exposure to the very dry summer month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are really trying to improve the quality of these grains to a point where people say there's no difference between the so-called winter barley and the spring barley anymore, which is good news, because with the climate change, you can actually then take one or the other. And as a matter of fact, you know, even some of the most difficult and critical and demanding breweries in Germany, the very large breweries in Germany, they are now accepting winter barley in their grain builds, which is for us an indication that if they can use it, then most other people should also be able to use it.
That's awesome. Well, another topic you sent me was titled CO2 footprint versus CO2 footloose. What does that mean?
Yeah, of course, you know what I mentioned before, the CO2 ambitions of especially the German government in combination
very aggressive,
with
yeah.
very aggressive yeah. In combination with a very I think we consider it a little bit narrow-minded, really. You know, the total ban of nuclear power in Germany, which is in contradiction with some of the decisions that are being made on the international agenda right now by even the G7 or G11 countries, mm-hmm. which have decided that they want a tripling of nuclear power globally. So Germany has taken an extra route, and that, you know, of course, is fully acceptable in terms of protection of our climate, which I think is in our own best interest, especially as monsters, because we are dependent on our climate. Otherwise, we're not going to have any more barley in the future, and also not malt. But of course, if this process is too aggressive, if it's too costly, and not really well tuned, then I think some of the companies that we have around there won't survive it. And at the moment, together with what I mentioned at the very beginning, you know, in combination with this rather unpredictable political direction that we have, it becomes very, very hard for us to adjust. Just to give an example, one of our solutions in the malting industry is certainly going to be heat pumps. So heat pumps is going to be one possibility to reduce our CO2 footprint. Sure. But of course, you know, this type of heat pump that we need, because it's obviously very, very large and also expensive heat pumps. And so the economical sensibility of this, or the fact that it makes economic sense, really depends on many factors, not only on the price of the heat pump, but also on the price for electric power, because obviously that is what is needed with the heat pump, the price for gas. So there are many factors that play together, and sometimes the decisions that are being made don't consider all the factors. So the fact that we in Germany need to be CO2 free or almost CO2 free within 5 or 6 years puts a very heavy burden on the German industry at the moment.
Yeah.
So we're not sure that the government is considering all of this, especially if you are, I'm nothing against the Green Party, but if they are too much in their Green Party program and not enough in the reality of what the industry is facing and what technically is possible, because, you know, some of the things that you may want to do, we don't have technical solutions as of now.
Yeah.
And that is a real challenge for us. And I guess this will continue into the new year that we have to tackle.
Interesting. Well, we're not going to have a chance to cover all your topics, but I thought I'd maybe close with you just came back from Brau 2023, one of the biggest conferences in Europe. Can you talk about some of your insights and observations from the show?
Yeah, I mean, with all the things that I've said before, it's not a surprise that not everyone was entirely happy. I mean, the drinking was good, I think. The parties were also
the
quite
beer was good.
The beer was great, especially our beer that we had with our and on our booth. By the way, Corona is coming back. We had
quite a
percentage. I think 30% of all attendees were coming home with Corona. so that is definitely not a good news. One thing which is changing not only the brewing industry but also agricultural industry is the merging, global merging.
Merger mania, I guess.
Merger mania, yeah. So we have, especially from some of the large French malting companies or grain companies, one should say, like Soufflé, for instance, they are buying right and left. So there's a very strong concentration in certain agricultural industries, and certainly in the grain sector and the malting sector for that matter. Bortmalt is one of the very large players. Soufflé is one of the very large players, and they Have recently acquired United Malt, which is a stock listed company in Australia. But United Malt also owns Country Malt, which is one of the big distributors for the U.S. craft industry. So, you know, with all of these changes, internal changes follow. IT systems have to be put together. There may be a resizing of sales teams of these companies. And I don't think all of this is good for the end customer. You know, you if you are the end customer, you just want a good service, a good product, and a good price. And with all these internal changes, at least for some time, this sometimes is a little bit working against these three things. So that was impressive to see that how these new huge conglomerates are getting ready to integrate what they have acquired. And then other than that, I think we saw many happy customers. of course, prices are an issue, but still, we didn't have a single complaint. I think we were seeing 800 people on our booth. Registered people.
Yeah.
And we didn't have one single complaint, not one single complaint for our products.
That's great.
You know, we have this year our revenue is going to be 42 million euros, and our total complaint cost, I think, is in the range of 13,000.
So that's awesome.
Very, 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 very small.
That's a testament to your quality, obviously.
Yeah, awesome. And that gives us a good start into the new year, and also what we have to expect from our politics and from all the rest.
Always a challenge. Yeah. Well, Axel, we are running low on time, unfortunately, but I just want to really quickly get your closing thoughts.
Yeah, I think 23 was a little bit of a challenge. I think 24 is definitely also going to be a challenge. We're still in the post-corona period, I think, in many ways. We have not returned to the business as it was before Corona, but I think with a good product, there's always a good market, and so we're quite positive getting into here.
Well, Axel, it's always great to have you as a guest, and really appreciate your honesty with some of the challenges going on, and I wish you the best of luck. Hopefully, we can have you on again next year and discuss how this year went. Appreciate you coming on, though. Thank you, Axel.
All the very best. Thanks for having me.
Today, my guest was Dr. Axel Goller. He's CEO of Best Malts, a family-owned malting company based in Germany. Once again, thank you again, Axel.
Sure. Great.
A big thank you to Axel Goller for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They invite you to join their upcoming brewery workshop, March 24th to 27th in Austin, Texas. This one-of-a-kind event brings together professional brewers to help start or grow your own craft brewery. To learn more, please visit breweryworkshop.com. Again, that's breweryworkshop.com. And also Beersmith Web, the online version of Beersmith Brewing Software. Beersmith for the Web lets you design great beer recipes from any browser, including your tablet or phone. Edit recipes on the go with access to the same full suite of recipe building tools as our desktop version. Try Beersmith Web today by creating a free account at beersmithrecipes.com. And finally, a reminder to click that like and subscribe button on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, or whatever platform you're on. Clicking those buttons is a great way to support the show. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.